welcome to the Senior Care Conversation. I am your host, Hillary Bailey, and today we are addressing one of the most painful realities that families face, and that is when siblings and relatives cannot agree on how to care for a loved one. These disagreements can often escalate, leaving both relationships and the person needing care at risk. Joining me today is Deanna High Easton, licensed in both Texas and Massachusetts. She is an attorney. And with her background in social work and expertise in estate planning, guardianship, all the things, probate law, she is a boss. She brings not only knowledge, but also compassion to families in crisis. So Deanna, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. So families, we're just going to dive right into this. So families sometimes think that documents are going to solve everything. But when there's emotions involved, relationships are involved, conflict obviously can intensify, especially when you have family with siblings. So the challenge is always balancing fairness, protection, and peace within the family unit, which can be very difficult. So why do you believe legal disagreements among siblings get so heated during the caregiving decision?
Well, I think the biggest thing, first and foremost, is that there's no communication before something happens and a caregiver needs to be appointed. I feel like that is the biggest stressor amongst families because they're not having the conversations early enough to know what to expect. So the people who are, you know, I'm going to say proposed wards because that's just kind of me going into my guardianship world, but people who are incapacitated or need to be put somewhere because they can't take care of themselves, they are in a position where they are not vocal at the time when they need to be moved and placed, or they're not having those conversations with their children and or their family members or their friends early enough. So then everybody is stuck saying, well, what are we supposed to do? And so when you have that situation available or happening, what happens is everybody has an opinion. When everyone has an opinion, everyone wants, you know, something to go a certain type of way, and emotions can get involved and they feel like they've been around for their family member who needs to go away or who needs to be cared for. So they feel like they should have a higher opinion of others. And so having those conversations not early enough are like the main reason why there's conflict amongst family members. And then emotions will follow suit after that. So I think if people are willing and wanting and hoping to have the conversations early enough, I think it can solve a lot of future conflict down the line.
I think also I've seen it in my work, and we've talked about this. I think this has come up with on every one of my shows because it's just such an issue in every situation with family members and caregiving. I think sometimes parents are afraid to upset one of their children because maybe they want this certain child to do this certain child to do that, and they don't want to have that conversation with everybody. So they kind of go to one child and say, oh, well, I would like for you to do this, or, and then I would like for you to do this. And they worry too much about hurting feelings instead of talking about what they actually want. And then I think, you know, people, we do, as children, we do get our feelings hurt. And so then we lash out at the parents. So there's just so much behind the family dynamic. So
there is.
How do you feel like the clear legal planning can reduce that conflict, like putting that in place?
Well, you know what? Having the conversations early enough and actually speaking with an attorney, right? Having an estate plan in place, putting documents in place. I personally do something where I do something called family meetings, where the parents that are having those difficult conversations or lack thereof, right? They're afraid to have the conversations like you just discussed. They can actually have those conversations with me. I mean, obviously they have to sign a waiver and make sure that I can speak to all of the family members, but it basically puts a buffer so that way they can feel comfortable enough after their estate plan is done to talk about the things that they're afraid to talk about to their children because they don't want to hurt their feelings. Mm-hmm. And so putting estate plan documents in place, like, you know, a will, a durable power of attorney, a medical power of attorney, and I can get into those specifics in a second, but having the documents, speaking with an attorney, making sure you have your plan in place will alleviate so much conflict down the line. We can prevent it, right? I mean, it sounds crazy to say that, but we can actually prevent conflict in your families if we have the conversation, you have a proper estate plan in place, and then, you know, you can come find me and I can be able to do something called a family meeting where we can talk about those issues, because the lack of communication is the very reason why families are put in these terrible and sad dynamics in the long run.
Absolutely. So in some ways you play the mediator.
I do. And, you know, me being a social worker in the past, I think it kind of prepared me for this. Now, I'm going to put on the record, I'm not officially a mediator, so I'm not saying that in any regard. All I'm doing is relaying the information about my client's estate plan once everything is drafted, once they've been able to tell me exactly what they're looking to do, and just having those open and, you know, honest conversations with their kids or their family members or their friends. So that way they're aware of what to expect in the event that, you know, the clients become incapacitated, something needs to be done, they need to be moved out of the house. So then that way there's no confusion, because that's where a lot of the issues come in, right? When children, family members are confused about where do they look, what are they supposed to do, who do they contact, where are all their stuff supposed to be. And so if we can find a way to eliminate that, or at least reduce the amount of questions that people have, they can address those questions with their family members right there in that meeting, right? So I'm not really necessarily mediating, I'm just kind of there is a little bit of a buffer. And if the parents are too afraid to say, hey, listen, this is what we want to do, I'll say it for them, right? That's the beauty of having an attorney, to be able to speak up on their behalf. Mm-hmm. So I'm their advocate, I'm their counselor, a social worker in me is kind of in that kumbaya thing. I became a lawyer not to become the person that's constantly trying to create conflict. I want to reduce it as much as possible.
I absolutely love that. So I know a lot of, in my work, when a family has, you know, more than one sibling, you know, they all want to be heard, and sometimes they feel overlooked. And so they might come to me on the side, you know, and say, hey, I really feel like this is going on, that's going on. How do you handle situations like that where maybe someone in the family kind of comes to you on the side because they feel overlooked and they want to be heard?
Well, I the biggest thing I say is that obviously I represent their parents, right? So if we're talking about the scenario where their parents are doing an estate plan, they want to talk to me, my clients are your parents. So in regards, I can listen. And I think it's important that a lot of attorneys will listen, but they might not act on that person's wishes and their desires because we're not representing them as the client. But in my family meetings, I feel as though it's a really good opportunity for, you know, children, friends, family, whoever is a part of that meeting, to voice their opinions and voice their emotions and voice how they feel, and not just talk to me about it, but talk to the person who is my client. So that way they can have a well-rounded understanding of what it is that they want to talk about, how they want to be heard. And I think just having that space to allow people to be open makes them feel more comfortable in the long run, even if their parents don't listen to what they want to do, right? Because at the end of the day, the clients are going to dictate exactly what they want, because that's the power of estate planning, right? Mm-hmm. But the people who are involved can still have a space to have that conversation. And I think it's very important that, you know, they do. I might not be able to act on it because, like I said, my clients are going to be the people who sign my engagement agreement, but I will provide a space to allow them to have and voice their concerns, because I think it's very important that they're heard.
So just because I'm all about education and I love to learn as well, and I think our viewers will benefit from this. When would a mediator, I know you said you're not officially a mediator, when is a mediator necessary and what do they do?
Well, you know, a mediator is a person, they're a neutral third party that comes in and listens to the sides of whoever is in conflict and tries to come up with an agreement so that everyone is on the same page. That's kind of the basic way that I can explain it. Mm-hmm. As far as when a mediator is needed, I mean, it just really depends on the family dynamic, because every single family is completely different. So some families are not going to need a mediator, others may desire one, right? Mm-hmm. During the estate planning process, it's not very typical for a mediator to get involved, because like I said, families, the clients themselves, so the people who are actually executing their estate plan, they're the ones that get to dictate exactly what they want. And they don't have to listen to anybody else about what other people's opinions are. They can listen to their emotions of their kids, but at the end of the day, they still get to choose what they want to do for their plan. As far as mediation for conflict amongst the family members, I always say you can always mediate for that, right? Mm-hmm. If anybody ends up dying, or if people are in a situation where they have to seek a guardianship because there are no estate planning documents in place, sometimes a mediator will be helpful, right? Because then we can decide who's going to serve as a guardian of the person who's no longer able to make decisions for themselves, right? Or if somebody's passed away, who is going to serve as the administrator of the estate, which is basically the person who goes to the probate court and says, this person has passed away. I need to make sure that all of their assets are paid for, all of their debt is paid, all the taxes are paid. So a lot of times people, when there's been no estate plan in place, and that includes for probate when someone's died and incapacitation when someone has no, you know, durable power of attorney or medical power of attorney, what happens is, right, a mediator will be so perfect to work with because they can help to prevent more court costs going into a case because they can't agree on who's going to serve as the administrator or agree on who's going to be the guardian. Mm-hmm. So it just really depends on the family dynamic. It depends on the situation itself. I always encourage people to talk to an attorney to find out if a mediator is in your best interest, because I think it will be very, very helpful to alleviate some future court costs down the line.
So the last question I was going to ask you is, what piece of advice would you give families who want to keep the peace? But it sounds like to me, plan early is the answer.
Plan early, communicate. Those are my two favorite things to say. Communicate, plan early. And you know, it's important to make sure that you find an estate planning attorney who resonates with you, right? Because you want them to be able to listen to what your desires are, your wants, your goals, your wishes, and how to make sure that your family is taken care of after you're gone or you become incapacitated.
All right, guys, we are going to be right back. And next, we're going to tackle caregiver burnout and the legal steps we can actually take to make caregiving easier.
We'll be right back with more insight, expert advice, and stories that matter to every generation. And we're back. I'm Hillary Bailey, and you're watching the Senior Care Conversation on Now Media Television.
Want more of what you're watching? Stay connected to the Senior Care Conversation and every Now Media TV favorite live or on demand anytime you like. Download the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and unlock nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. On the move, you can also catch the podcast version right from our website at www.nowmedia.tv. From business and news to lifestyle, culture, and beyond, Now Media TV is streaming around the clock, ready whenever you are. All right, guys, we are back with DNA, Who's the Boss? And in this segment, we're going to focus on something really talked about, caregiver burnout. I talk about it a lot, but I don't think people and their families talk about it a lot. So behind every senior receiving care is someone carrying a heavy heart, often feeling legally powerless to make decisions. So let's talk about how the law can lighten the load for them. So we are going to get into legal documents, which is always something wonderful to learn about, and the CNA is going to help us and debunk all of this. So let's talk about what legal documents make caregiving easier and less stressful.
There are so many. I mean, how much time do we have? Do we have a lot of time?
Talk about them all, girl.
Okay. So the first ones that come to my head automatically is a durable power of attorney. Okay. So what that is, it's a document where you appoint somebody known as an agent who's able to basically make decisions regarding your care for legal and your financial matters. So that can be like bank accounts. It could be a house. It could be paying your mortgage. It could literally be anything that you own an asset for, investment accounts. That is a durable power of attorney here in Texas. You can make it effective upon your incapacitation or effective immediately upon signing. Person has a choice, which is great. A medical power of attorney is super important. It's the same idea as a durable power of attorney. The only difference is it's for your medical decisions, right? So somebody who is appointed as your agent can make medical decisions on your behalf. It's great, right? Those two right there are the most important documents when it comes to caregiving. Reason being is if people do not have those documents in place, it makes it extremely difficult for a caregiver to do anything to help them, right? If you don't have a durable power of attorney or a medical power of attorney, this is when the guardianship courts has to get involved, because there's nobody who has legal authority to make any decisions regarding the care of the proposed ward, which is the person that needs to be under a guardianship. So those two documents are super important. I mean, obviously having a will is important for when somebody passes away. It's not as important for caregiving matters, but those two documents are really powerful. Some people can even incorporate, you know, kind of incapacitation, wishes, desires, wants in their trust. Having a revocable living trust, sometimes people will do both just in case they, you know, they either don't do the documents for what I just mentioned, or they're like, you know what, I just want to have extra added protection. Let me include a little bit of incapacitation language in my trust. So those are the main sources that people should have. And then I also will mention there's something called a directive to physicians. This is not as important, but I think it's really powerful because it allows somebody to dictate how they want their end of life care. So that way their family members are not burdened with that choice. It's a huge, huge, powerful document that is really taking away the burden from your family members, because it's already going to be hard enough if they're going to have to be in a situation where they say, okay, do I leave someone on life support or not? Do I want my family member to stay with me, even if they're in a type of state or not? So I think it's a very, very powerful document that a lot of people should be encouraged to do. It's a hard document to make a decision on, but it's a powerful document for your loved ones in the long run.
So especially like the durable medical power of attorney, excuse me. How can they protect caregivers from burnout?
Well, as far as burnout goes, I mean, I will say this, when the family is in conflict, the caregiver is the one who's dealing with all the consequences of what that looks like, right? So let me back up just a little bit, because when somebody has a durable power of attorney or medical power of attorney, that person is able to make decisions in actually hiring the caregiver. So that's what I want to make sure I preface that really quickly. But as far as the caregiver goes, avoiding burnout is people having those estate plans in place will help the caregiver be able to do their job, to be able to take care of the family member, right? Because if there's conflict amongst the family on who is even able to make those decisions, the caregiver is going to feel like they're getting the runaround on top of trying to care for the person, and they don't know who they're supposed to listen to. So it creates a huge, huge problem for the caregiver, because the idea is we want to make sure that they are good, because if they're good, they're going to take care of your family members, right? They're going to take care of your loved ones. So that's a really big way to ensure that caregivers don't have burnout. Having the documentation in place so they know exactly who they need to be talking with is very, very, very important. Go ahead.
Sorry. Let me ask you this. So with a medical power of attorney, that's, you know, they have to make a lot of difficult decisions. And I think sometimes decision fatigue is a thing for them. I had the question. It was right here.
Well, that's okay. Well, let me tell you this while you're thinking about that.
We'll come back. Are they able to have someone else on the document with them? So say like they're out of town, or they're just like, you know what, I'm tired. I need to take 3 weeks off from, you know, making decisions for a mom. I want you to do it. Is that possible?
Yes, it is. And it's funny because we were both on the same wavelength. You came to the question and I was just about to speak on it. So you're allowed to have alternates, right? That's the power of estate planning. Having an alternate listed on all of your documents is super powerful, because it allows someone else to step in your shoes in the event that you are unable to do it. I mean, I'm a huge person and proponent of like preparing for the unexpected, because I have to be, right? Being an estate plan, probate and guardianship attorney, I have to be thinking about the worst case scenario at all times. So I always have at least three people listed on every single one of my documents in the event that somebody passes, they're become incapacitated themselves, they're unable to serve in that moment. So then that way caregivers have the opportunity to help themselves in the event of burnout. I also will say it's important to make sure that there's a HIPAA authorization in all of your documents, because it's hard to make a decision for your medical care if you can't have access to the records, right? Yeah. So that's very, very, very important. But another thing that caregivers can do, and this is like me being the counselor that I am, AKA this is the counselor/lawyer, therapy, you know, secondary trauma is such a huge thing. And I'm speaking from a social worker perspective. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what that meant until I lived it, right? So it's not legal related, but it is, because if you're listed as an alternate or even an agent for anybody, for their durable or their medical power of attorney, and you're suffering, you're going to have a hard time making those decisions, because you're carrying the load of, you know, the person you're taking care of or whatever, or, you know, even if there's conflict amongst the family members. So make sure you go to therapy and try to help yourself through that, or do something that makes you happy so you can still step in the shoes and help whoever you're taking care of.
That was actually my next question. I was going to ask you, putting on your social work hat, because, you know, we all know about, like you talked about therapy and, you know, doing some self-care, me time. Are there other resources out in the community for the caregivers that are actually caring for their loved ones, or even the children who might have some decision fatigue going on that they can utilize?
You know, I always say that kind of reaching out to your local community and finding resources amongst your local community, like that's the first step, right? Mm-hmm. And there's, I didn't realize how big Facebook groups were out here until I moved to Texas. I mean, reaching out to people in a Facebook group is a great way to do it. I mean, people like yourselves, Hillary, like you are fantastic. You are a great resource to be able to help other people. I think it's just knowing someone who knows someone, right? I looking up online and seeing if you can find anybody that has a group that you can speak with, because support groups are such a big deal. I didn't have that when I was a social worker, and I wish I did, because I think if I did, I would have stayed in a little bit longer. And so, you know, when I went to therapy, I just discovered more support groups. And then, you know, because a therapist is going to be having all the connections, right? And connect you to the right person. So, I mean, I don't have any particular groups that I can say definitively, you need to go here. But I will say that there are resources out there. You just have to look for them. And if you know someone, ask that person and see if they know someone else. And because this is a wide network, I will say that we're not confined to Texas, but there are networks and support groups for everybody out there. You just have to be able to find them.
Absolutely. So we got about 2.5 minutes left. So I kind of want to dive into so not everyone can afford outside caregivers, right? So some of the kids, you know, might have to care for their parents and they might also need to work. How can they legally protect their jobs and their finances if they have to step in and be the one?
Yeah, so this is a very deep question, right? And the reason being is that everybody's family dynamic looks different and everyone's job looks different, right? So you can try and see if you can get protection under the FMLA Act, you know, the Family Medical Leave Act, so that way you can say, okay, well, I'm not going to lose my job. Unfortunately, it's unpaid, right? But at least it's an option for you to be able to help. State-specific laws might allow people to take some extra time off. Sometimes an employer-specific, you know, your employer itself will be able to help you in terms of saying, okay, well, you need to be there for your parent. Having a power of attorney, a lot of times you can actually, the principal of the durable power of attorney, they can actually pay from their own estate their children or their family members to be able to help them. So that's something that they could do and include it in their document. So that way there's at least a little bit of compensation. I mean, some people will even go as far as creating a caregiver compensation agreement, right? They're going to say, hey, listen, because you're taking care of me, I'm going to be able to do this. Now, the caveat of that is if the person who is trying to engage in that agreement is actually incapacitated, they can't then create an agreement. But the person who is an agent of the principal who's the subject of needing care, they can engage in a compensation agreement to be able to help. But there's resources out there, but you just have to ask your employer. I think that's the biggest thing, because it's sad. People really want to be there for their family members and they feel restricted because they don't feel like they can be there full time because of the compensation piece. But there are ways for people to get paid. It's just a matter of making sure that you can keep your job. And I always just tell people, like, beg.
So how can people get a hold of you? Please tell us if they need your services.
Oh, yes. So they can call my office at 281-895-1721. I work, you know, High Easton Law Firm would be very happy. They can visit my website at higheastonlaw.com. I have a form that they can set up directly using a calendar link, and, you know, they can email me. And my name is so unique. You can find me on any social media platform. High Easton Law, DNA High Easton. You can find me anywhere and everywhere.
All right, guys, we are going to be right back and we're going to talk about what happens when couples don't agree on planning.
We'll be right back with more insight, expert advice, and stories that matter to every generation. And we're back. I'm Hillary Bailey, and you're watching the Senior Care Conversation on Now Media Television.
All right, guys, welcome back to the Senior Care Conversation. I am still here with DNA High Easton, who is a legal planning attorney, an elder law attorney, a probate attorney. She's all the things. So in this segment, we're going to talk about when couples don't agree on planning or what they want. How do we deal with that? So my first question is, why do couples often avoid planning until it's too late?
I think one of the biggest issues is that they don't have an agreement on what they want to do, right? Like if they're married and if there's children involved, right? They're like, who do we leave our children with? Because they want to make sure it's somebody who has the right values, who, you know, who's going to raise them the way that they would raise them. So I feel like that is a huge, huge deterrent for why couples can't agree to do estate planning until it's too late. The other reason is fear. You know, a lot of people will say, okay, well, we want to get our estate plan done. We know it's important. And then it kind of just falls by the wayside because they're afraid to start having those conversations. And I think that is a huge, huge reason why a lot of people just wait until it's too late. Because when somebody is laying in a hospital and they know that they're not going to make it, that's when they're like, oh my gosh, I need to get my affairs in order, because they know that they have a definitive reason to know that they might not make it, right? Or their family members are going to be in the place and the mindset to say, okay, well, what can we do to help you? Because we want to make sure you get your affairs in order. So a fear is a huge proponent as to why people are not willing to have those conversations. And I also think the third reason is that they don't really know what they don't know. And that sounds very weird for me to say, but I'm going to break it down this way. They are in situations where they're kind of going through life, or they don't think they need an estate plan because they're like, oh, well, you know, I don't own that many assets. I don't own, you know, $1 million to be able to protect it. So they're just thinking, well, it'll just go automatically to my family members. No worries. And so those misconceptions actually prevent people from doing the proper planning, not putting themselves in a situation where it is too late. And then the other thing is that a lot of attorneys are not going to be at your beck and call, right? So like by the time you actually need something, you need to then find an attorney who's available to take the call to make sure that things are put in place properly. I mean, I call myself kind of the bedside attorney because I'll travel to different prospective clients to where they need to get their estate plan done, but that's not very common in a lot of places. And so there's so many reasons why people don't do it, but they also don't know what types of questions to ask. They're like, okay, well, we are going to wait until we need to worry about it because we don't know what we're supposed to ask. Like, I don't want to go to an attorney and not have enough information. And it's a misconception, right? You can come to the attorney and ask all the questions you want. That's what we're here for, to educate you just as much as we are helping you through the legal process and planning your documents. So there's so many reasons. I mean, we can literally talk here for the next 2 hours as to why people are not able to do their estate plan when the time comes until it's too late. But I really want to encourage all of your viewers, like, you have to get your estate plan done. I mean, if you don't know what questions to ask, just find an attorney, start to have the conversation, and they'll help guide you, because our job is to make sure that we ask the right questions so that you start to think about what a potential plan could look like before it's too late for your family members.
So let's talk about the what ifs. What if they don't plan? And you've got some, like you talked about, somebody laying in a hospital bed and they pass and they don't have anything laid out. What happens then?
Oh, it's so sad. Okay, so if people do not plan, it depends on the situation that we're talking about. So let's start off in, you know, the legal capacity situation, right? Let's say somebody is in a hospital, they become incapacitated, the doctors put in their chart, they're incapacitated, they can't make decisions for themselves. Now that means that you have to file a guardianship application in the court to seek legal authority to make decisions for this particular person. You can make decisions. There are two things. It's called a guardian of a person, which is basically where you take care of their person, help them get clothes. Then there's a guardian of the estate, which is if they have money, you need to get legal authority to be able to handle their money. But it's a very long, very drawn out, very expensive process to go through the guardianship courts. Instead of just spending a little bit of money, I'm not going to say a little, but spending money on an estate plan beforehand. So you have to get an attorney ad litem who's going to have to do an entire investigation, or they're the ones that represent the proposed ward in the proceeding. There has to be an investigation by the court. They have to get a staff attorney involved. You have to find an attorney to be able to, you know, advocate for the proposed guardian who wants to be able to get legal authority. So as you can imagine, this process adds up. It takes a lot of time. And on top of that, when you have to apply for a guardianship, the person is going to be under the umbrella of having a guardian until they become capacitated again. They are no longer incapacitated. They die, which is really sad. So you can imagine people are going to have to be paying an attorney to do reports every single year to have to make sure that the court is informed about, right, what's happening with this ward. And so that is the danger of not having just those two documents I discussed, the durable power of attorney and the medical power of attorney. Could you imagine if people just knew that, right? Two documents versus spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to get someone to get legal authority. So that's the danger for legal incapacitation. The other side of that is that... Yeah, the other side of that is if people die without a will, there's something called intestate succession. So what that means is that you did not outline what you wanted your wishes and your desires to be on who you want your property to go to. Because of that, you then have to apply for the probate court, seek somebody known as an administrator to say, hey, listen, this person has died. I need to be able to get access to their property so that I can transfer legal title over to the beneficiaries that are, it's a default law. So the law is already created on who's going to get what property. So let's say there's a couple, this happens all the time. It's so sad. There's a couple that is married and somebody leaves and they don't legally get divorced, right? And they don't speak to this person, have no desire to have a conversation with them. They die. Unfortunately, that spouse is entitled to part of their estate because of the default law. Now, if they had created a will, they could have said, I don't want this to go to my partner. I want it to go to whoever I desire that to be. So that's the power of doing estate planning, because you do not want to be in a situation where you think, okay, I'm going to be protected because I could just give it to my kids. But guess what? If you have children that are outside of your marriage, they are also having an interest in that property and you can't do anything about it unless you put it in a will. So that's the power of estate planning in those kind of two scenarios. And there's so many more scenarios that I can talk about, but we don't have enough time on your show for that, Hillary.
Man, that, you know, I just, when you were like hundreds of thousands of dollars, I was just thinking, and the question that was popping out of my mouth at that time was like, what do people do when they don't have the money to spend on that?
You know, it's crazy. And you know, I'm a little dramatic sometimes. I'm gonna say I'm DNA, right? So hundreds of thousands might be a little bit of a stretch, but I will say, like, let's say somebody needs to get a guardian for somebody who's like 20 years old. If they're 20, they could live until they're about 80. So that means that an attorney is going to have to apply, depending on, you know, what the type of guardianship it is, they're going to have to inform the court every single year what's happening. And so as you can imagine, legal fees are going to add up regardless. But we have to make sure that, you know, sometimes guardianships are inevitable, right? Like if there are children that are under the age of 18 and they're already, you know, disabled in some regard and can't make legal decisions for themselves, even when they turn 18, automatically they're going to need to have a guardianship. But there are people that can prevent that from happening, right? Like if you're driving on the street and you don't have a durable power of attorney or a medical power of attorney, and you get into a car accident and you're in a coma, unfortunately, someone's going to need to seek a guardianship for you, and that can take a lot of time. And then people are going to have to cough up their own money to be able to do it, because if they don't have access to the funds to be like your funds to be able to do it, then they're going to have to come up with the money. So it becomes a very multi-layered problem when people do not have their estate plan in place.
So with the last about 2.5 minutes that we have, let's talk about couples have healthier conversations about planning earlier. What are some tools they can use?
Well, I always say that you can speak with an attorney about it when you guys are together having your initial consultation. You know, having family meetings are important, but that's always after the fact. But just communication. I think a lot of people need to be okay with being uncomfortable, because estate planning is the definition of being uncomfortable, right? And I think just starting to ask the questions, I think, helps a little bit with having the open, really, really hard conversations about what are we supposed to do. I mean, I'm an estate planning attorney, so it's actually a little awkward, but the other day I was driving with my husband and I was like, do you want to be cremated or do you? And it was just super random. And he was like, yes, I'm married to you. Like, I shouldn't even think that this is a topic of conversation, even though it's already written down somewhere. But I always like to ask the questions, like, did you change your mind? Do you want to talk about it? And I think feeling comfortable to have those conversations, or even, I don't want to say adding a little humor because that sounds a little dark, but I mean, like, not feeling the weight of those decisions when you're waiting at the last minute to do it will help, because you can add a little bit of lightness to the conversation. Because even though you're talking about your demise, or you're talking about in the event that you become incapacitated, at least you're not doing it with the stress and the weight on top of you as a couple, or just in general, so that it feels a little lighter to have the conversation. So I encourage people, go talk to an attorney, even if you feel like you don't need to. A lot of attorneys, including myself, offer, you know, free consultations where we can walk you through what that potentially looks like, so you can at least start to feel comfortable to have the conversations. We'll provide that buffer for you.
That's wonderful. All right, guys, up next, we're going to dive into do-it-yourself estate planning, which sounds really scary and like something you shouldn't do, but we will be right back to talk about it.
We'll be right back with more insight, expert advice, and stories that matter to every generation. And we're back. I'm Hillary Bailey, and you're watching the Senior Care Conversation on Now Media Television.
Don't miss a second of this show or any of your Now Media TV favorites, streaming live and on demand whenever and wherever you want. Grab the free Now Media TV app on Roku or iOS and enjoy instant access to our lineup of bilingual programs in English and Spanish. Prefer to listen on the go? You can listen to our podcast, including the Senior Care Conversation, anytime on the Now Media TV website at www.nowmedia.tv, covering business, breaking news, lifestyle, culture, and more. Now Media TV is available 24/7 and ready whenever you are. Welcome back, guys. We're on our last segment with DNA. She is a powerful estate planning attorney. And we are going to talk about do-it-yourself estate planning, which I made a little joke before talking about maybe we shouldn't do that. And I probably think we shouldn't. And I think DNA is going to share with us maybe the pros and cons, probably more cons. So let's talk about do-it-yourself estate planning.
Yeah, I was going to say there's not a lot of pros. I mean, the only pro is that it gets done, but what does that look like with it getting done, right? So, I mean, I will say this. A lot of people know that attorneys can be expensive, right? Myself can be included in that process, especially if you don't have a lot of money. But the danger about doing your own estate plan is that it may not necessarily be done correctly. And so if it's not done correctly, what happens is then when you hire an attorney, we then have to go back and fix the original problem instead of just doing it right in the first place. I have a lot of horror stories, and I don't think we have enough time for that. But I will say I understand that, you know, especially in this day and age with AI, everyone thinks, oh, I can do my own. But if you miss key information, it actually prevents you from being able to even move forward in the probate court the way that you think you could, or even if you're seeking a guardianship. So it's really important that you at least consult an attorney, even if you decide that you want to do it yourself. I mean, a lot of attorneys will review documents for prospective clients and say, okay, let's just make sure everything is taken care of the way it needs to be, because if it's done incorrectly, you're going to spend more money, more time for us to have to go back and fix it instead of just doing it correctly in the first place. So
why are online forms not enough when it comes to estate planning?
There's a lot of, like, you know, state nuances that a lot of online forms might not have, right? So, like, if you find a generic estate planning document, and I say that generically, no pun intended.
Right.
if you find a document online, I mean, it might not even be specific to your state. In every single state has their own laws, right? So this is why attorneys have to be licensed in the state that they plan on practicing, because there's a lot of state nuances that are important that need to be made clear, made known, and made and be included in the proper estate planning documents. So I think that's why finding just a regular form online is, I don't advise it. Now, does that mean that you can't put that in place and have an attorney look it over just to make sure everything is okay? Yes, you can do that as well. Because I know people are not able to afford an attorney. So there's always an option. It just has to figure out what the best option is for your family and your finances. However, you have to make sure at least an attorney looks it over, because a lot of the forms online, they might be good, they might not. And you don't want to be in a situation when they're not and you can't even use it. I have a personal story where, you know, I'm sharing a little bit of my personal information, but I feel like it's important for people to know, where I knew somebody who got a form online and got a medical power of attorney online and thought that it was correct. And unfortunately, the person who had signed that medical power of attorney, they were about to go onto hospice and they did not have any legal capacity at the time. And so unfortunately, the person who was the agent, or at least they thought they were the agent, it was not done properly. So they were not able to make any medical decisions on that person's behalf. It was too late to then have to seek a guardianship, because we were not in a position where there would be enough time for them to seek a guardianship. So that's a situation you do not want to be in, right? I have a lot of horror stories for DIY documents, and that even includes wills. We can talk about that in a little bit. But it's important to make sure that if you decide that you want to do it online, you at least consult an attorney and make sure that it's done correctly, because then we can fix the issue before it becomes a bigger problem. Because when it becomes a court problem, it's a lot harder to go back from and to fix.
So I would love to hear some examples of how do-it-yourself estate planning has backfired for people. I think being as honest as we can and you sharing real life stories, somebody might see themselves in your example.
Yes. Yeah, so I know of somebody who created they did some research online and needed to change their will. Now, needing to change their will, they read about something called a codicil, which is basically an amendment to a will, basically saying, I want to keep the original will, but I want to add to it. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't advise people do codicils because it gets very complicated, especially if you can't find the original will. And what happened was the original will was not able to be found. And so the codicil was an original, but the will was not an original. But if they had spoken to an attorney, they would have said, well, if you want to change something in a document, you might as well just scrap the whole thing and do something new. So that took a whole year and a half before they were even able to go before the court, because that one little mistake of not speaking to an attorney cost them years and legal fees and time not being able to probate a will. So that's one situation. I have another situation where somebody thought that they could do it themselves, and they drafted a trust and was super like, oh, I can do this, everything is going to be fine. And they drafted the trust, but they didn't know that they are supposed to actually fund the trust, which means that you have to put all of the assets into the trust. So, I mean, kudos for them for doing the research and trying. But the sad part about it is that they didn't realize that until it was too late. And by the time a trust administration was supposed to happen after the person had died, the house got stuck in probate because the house was not funded into the trust the way it was supposed to. So unfortunately, even though they created a trust and thought everything was fine, it was not being able to be honored because the trust wasn't properly funded. And then sometimes people think that just by typing the name of the account into the trust, that means that for their bank accounts, I'm saying, that means that it's automatically in there. It's not. You actually have to go through the entire process and go to the bank and actually transfer the bank into its own trust, you know, account that the trust owns. So there's so many steps that are important that people don't necessarily know about. And they think that, okay, well, if it's online, I can do it. It's fine. No problem. But this is why it's so important to speak to an attorney, because we can make sure that we can find the pitfalls and all the cracks that might be in the DIY version that you guys have created yourselves.
For me, it's like the same as going to TikTok for medical advice.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, there's so much out there, right?
Yeah. Guys, do it yourself, estate planning. It's a no-go unless you're a lawyer. Please don't do it yourself.
Yes.
You have been throwing a lot of words around, like probate, wills, trusts. You talked about a will earlier. So let's talk about really quickly when you have to probate a will and why.
Yes. So, I mean, I will say this. If people have a will, they don't necessarily have to actually probate it depending on the certain circumstances, but that's when you speak to an attorney and figure out what that looks like. Mm-hmm. But when you probate a will, it's basically when somebody dies, you're saying to the court, Hi, Judge. Unfortunately, this person has died. I have assets that are still tied to the person who's died, like in their name. I need to be able to transfer it to their heirs or their beneficiaries, which are basically people that are going to inherit their property. So that's the process of probate, right? People, if you have a will, it's known as an executor. So the executor is the person who's named in the will to go before the judge and say, "Hi, Judge. Unfortunately, this person has died. I need to be able to transfer their assets to their loved ones based on the way that the will reads." So that's the power of a will and why it's super important, because we need to make sure that you can transfer title to the people that you want to give it to. And the executor is going to do that, and they're going to pay off all the debts, and they're going to take care of making sure the taxes are paid and all of that good stuff. So that's probating a will. As far as a trust, right? A trust is a non-probate asset. So what that basically means is that you do not have to go to the court to be able to transfer your assets. If the trust owns your property, as something people will do a revocable living trust, which basically means it's a trust that they create during their lifetime that stands, I kind of say it's kind of like standing in the shoes of them. And they appoint somebody known as a trustee, who's the person who kind of handles the day-to-day operations of a trust, right? Like, how do I pay my bills? If I put my house in the trust, how do I pay my mortgage? The trustee is going to be the person to do that. And they will do all of that for the benefit of the beneficiaries, which are people that you name to basically take care of you within the trust. So if you do a trust, what happens is you're not putting yourself in a situation where your family is going to have to apply to the probate court and say, "Hey, Judge, someone's passed away. This person's passed away. I need to transfer title." It's a faster process. It's private because probate is completely public. People don't know this, but you can literally look up anybody's will who's probating. So that's why it's, there's the benefits of having a trust, and it's faster. It might not cost as much, because going through the probate court, you're going to have to pay an attorney to then help you through that process. And then with the trust, you might have more upfront costs in the very, very beginning. But in the long run, the value is super, super amazing, because it's private. It can happen very quickly. And if the trust already owns a lot of the property, then it's going to be an easy title transfer to the beneficiaries that are listed.
This has been amazing. You have given us so much wonderful information. Tell us one more time where people can find you when they need your help.
Oh, of course. So they can visit my website at higheastonlaw.com. They can call my office at 281-895-1721. They can find us on social media, TikTok, Instagram, at High Easton Law. And then they can find me personally at DNA High Easton. I'm everywhere because I'm super, super unique.
All right, DNA, thank you again so much for joining us today. Your insights have shown us that legal planning is really about love, clarity, and protection. From managing family disagreements and easing caregiver burnout to aligning with your spouse and avoiding do-it-yourself pitfalls, today's conversation reminded us that the right guidance can change everything. To our viewers, I encourage you to reflect on your own family's needs and take steps to protect the people that you love. I'm Hillary Bailey, and this has been the Senior Care Conversation. Until next time, take care of yourself and your loved ones.